Welcome to Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host today, Travis, in case you didn't know that by now. And I'm joined by Emily and Matt, also in case you didn't know that by now. This week, I'm just coming back. This is like my second day back from a vacation, y'all. So my brain is still a little bit in vacation mode, but we're here to do our best today. So you might have to bear with me with some of my horrible jokes that might just come out today that no one finds funny except for me in my own brain. But what we are going to talk about that probably will be of more value to you than my bad attempt at any humor is repositioning flights. It's one of the best strategies in points and miles, has some risks associated with it that we're going to discuss and that you should certainly be aware of, as well as how we would recommend managing those risks and how we put some of our own approaches to it. I think we have kind of slightly different approaches amongst all of us, but I don't know if anyone's been burnt. Anyone been completely burnt by a repositioning flight?
I almost was like 2 weeks ago, but didn't end up being an issue. But otherwise, I haven't yet, and I hope to never be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't say I've been burned yet.
Yeah. Same. So as long as you manage the risks appropriately, I think that the odds of being burned is pretty low. So we'll talk when you should do them. We'll talk about what they are, as well as when you should do them, when you shouldn't, and how to avoid those risks that might turn your dream business class or first class or economy or premium economy redemption into an airport sleepover. But I'm really interested. None of us have been burnt, but what's been your closest call when repositioning?
Matt, it sounds like you got a recent one. You
all are... right? So for our recent, now recent Morocco trip, we were originally I had to reposition to Toronto and Montreal to then fly to Casablanca because there was one seat on either plane. I ended up later rebooking it out of Dulles, so easier to not have to essentially transit Canada to get to Africa. But regardless,
that's a normal way to go.
I know exactly.
Standard routing.
Well, what's even funnier is for the time being, it was Raleigh to Montreal, or Raleigh to Toronto. No, it was Raleigh to Montreal. Then one of us was Montreal to Toronto. So that was me. I was taking the brunt of it just because like there was literally nothing otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, so we changed it to go out of Dulles. So, but I had booked through Aeroplan. And as you might know, Aeroplan basically charges all kinds of fees for cancels, changes, all that kind of stuff. So it was going to be like $350 to cancel the flight that we no longer needed. So I just kind of let it sit because I was like, I'm not really sure I want to pay $350 to get, I want to say it was like 30 or 40,000 Aeroplan points back. It was not a great redemption. So I just kind of was like, well, let's see what happens. Well, the day of our flight was, you know, we were still flying out on the same date, but I still hadn't canceled it. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll figure out what I'm going to do. It'll be game time decision. Well, I got an alert that the flight was canceled. And it turns out that there was a massive ice storm heading towards Montreal that day, which was the day we were leaving for our trip. Granted, we weren't flying through Montreal anymore, but had we been, we would have been stuck in Raleigh essentially with like 6 or 8 hours notice to try and get to Montreal or Toronto for the two of us to then make our other flight. So we weren't burned because I had been able to rebook, but if I hadn't done that, we would very likely have been super burnt there because our positioning flight was going to get canceled with essentially no real other way to get there and no alternative flights to Morocco that I could find at that moment.
So, right.
So yeah. Kind of was a close call, but guess what? I didn't have to pay $350 to get my 45 or whatever thousand Aeroplan points back. So that was the real win.
Yeah, you're kind of describing an ideal scenario for you.
Yeah. Well, it was an ideal scenario in that it didn't affect me, but had it affected me, it would have been real not so good.
Oof. Yeah. That's, that would have been kind of a whirlwind. Was it direct? It would have been direct for you to Toronto and direct for Ashley to Montreal.
Direct for Ashley to Montreal. We were both flying to Montreal, and then I was hopping over to Toronto because I was taking the cake on that one, knowing that we were flying so far out of the way that I was like, okay, I'll take the extra leg. See you in Casablanca.
See you in Casablanca.
Yeah.
How was your trip once you got there?
Oh, it was good. It was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that going to be the first time that y'all split up on separate long haul flights?
I think we have, but none come to mind. I'm pretty sure we have before. But like to Europe, I don't know that that's long haul. I don't consider it long haul, but I know some people do. So, but yeah, no, we haven't gone to like Asia or Australia, like a true long haul separate. I know you guys do a lot. Or some as an accommodation when you can't find space. And I think it's a good way to do it, to be able to fly what you want when you need it. But we haven't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that Travis, was my close call.
That was your close.
Not so close, close call.
Close. Yeah.
Would have been a close call.
Exactly, yep. Exactly.
Emily, what about you, Travis?
Oh.
Or me? You want to go me?
Jinx.
I'll go. And it's honestly, I set myself up for failure. I didn't fully fail, but I was like relatively new into the hobby. This was maybe like 2021 or 2019. I don't remember. And, I was so excited about the idea of positioning flights that I was like repositioning for things that were pretty unnecessary.
Oh.
Like, I had just moved to Denver and I had a trip in Asheville that I had to get to. And I don't think there was a nonstop flight at that point. I think there is now, but I repositioned to Chicago on a different airline and then flew from Chicago to Asheville and the same on the way back. And on the way back, it was definitely a close call. And I was like transitioning through the Chicago airport or through ORD, which is gigantic. And I flew into one terminal and had to get to a different terminal and go through security. And it was just like a lot of, you know, time I hadn't really accounted for. All the save, probably like $50. how close did I cut it? Maybe 20 minutes.
That's
but
tight.
You know, worth it for my wallet, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't think I would do that again.
I've been pretty fortunate with my repositioning flights. I tend to be very conservative with them, but the closest that I had was we were flying out of Newark on our long haul, and this was back when I worked night shifts in my old job. So I got off work, headed straight to the airport, super tired, catching a JetBlue flight from Houston Hobby to JFK. And I'm like,
were you trying to go from JFK to Newark?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's a repositioning flight.
That should be
a
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. Just like they used to offer a flight from the one Houston airport to the other Houston airport, they should offer intra New York flights from JFK to Newark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I had done it multiple times before from LaGuardia to JFK.
Yeah. I've done that. Yeah.
That's not terrible. So I said, it's Newark. I left myself like 4.5 hours between flights and like still made it in plenty of time. But that trip from JFK to Newark was like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a little on edge and sleep deprived, but
right.
Not 20.
Also
minutes,
like, repositioning from Texas to New York. How long is that flight for you?
Like 3.5 hours.
That has to be close to like the maximum distance you would want to reposition like in the U.S. for a flight. Like at what point? Like I guess what's that? I guess that's a question. How far for you is like too far for repositioning? Because like to me, I'll position from North Carolina to like Chicago, New York, D.C., yep. Miami, and those are all like hour and a half max flights. Mm-hmm. if I have gone to Dallas before, which is like a 2-hour flight.
Yeah. I've kind of hit it all. The only place that I really try to avoid is like Seattle, because that's a like 4.5, almost 5-hour long flight.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've done West Coast, like San Francisco, LA, like there, New York.
Are those like 3-hour flights for you too?
They're about the same, like 3, 3.5.
Gotcha.
So I wouldn't do it.
You're probably doing it.
I totally would do it for Europe.
Oh, really? Oh, I would definitely not. Yeah.
Like right now, although the Saudi Arabia trip is probably getting canceled. Like right now, I'm flying back into JFK. We're on our return, supposed to go from Riyadh to London to JFK, and then I just reposition back from JFK to Newark or LaGuardia or something back to Houston.
I mean, I think I can understand it for sure, especially if you're trying to fly a particular product.
And that's exactly like, that one.
Yeah. Or there's just like no availability.
Yeah. Like that one, I'm supposed to fly Saudia to London and then Virgin Atlantic upper class, the new one to New York. Nice. So
nice.
That's why I've wanted to fly that one for a while. And I always try to get it on like the San Francisco or LA route. So that way it is a longer flight, but there's just never as much availability as there is to New York.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, we've been talking a lot about our experiences here. But let's, for those of you who don't know, let's talk about like what a repositioning flight actually is and why you should care. Simply put, a repositioning flight is a separate ticket you book to get to another airport where a better award deal is available. So for example, if I found award availability out of Dallas, but not on the connecting leg from Houston to Dallas, well, I would book the award flight from Dallas. So now I just have to get to Dallas. So, you know, I could drive, I could take the bus. There's a lot of ways to do it. But the most common is just book a separate flight to get there. You're repositioning to access that additional award availability or maybe just a better rate. You know, like another example might be you live in Kansas City and flying out of Kansas City, they're charging 180,000 miles in business class to go to Europe. But out of JFK, it's 60K. Well, you're saving 120,000 points. So you just book a separate flight to JFK first. You can also do it on the way back, right? Like I just discussed, I'm flying into New York and then I'll book a separate flight home. Those are generally a little bit safer. Those risks tend to materialize more on your outbound because like no one's really going to be upset if you spend an extra day on your trip. But if you miss your flight to get to your destination, then that's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
So, and like the airlines don't really care if you're like, oh, I missed my flight, but it wasn't on the same ticket, then that's not their fault. Right. That's not their
well, yeah, in terms of contract of carriage, they literally are not responsible.
Yeah.
And a lot of airlines have specific provisions about that in the contract of carriage. So
yeah. I mean it's like literally no different than if you overslept your alarm and you were late to the airport and you didn't make it in time. Like
however, like, there is a I don't know if it's official or unofficial, but they literally call it like the flat tire like rule provision, whatever, courtesy to where like they don't have to, but they can like try to accommodate you in a situation. Yeah,
I
like
actually
that.
I did have that, have taken advantage of that once.
Oh, nice.
through United, coming back from Denver to Houston on a work trip. And, we were out, in like the mountain area. That's what I'm calling it. We were out in the mountain area.
We were on the mountain area of Denver because, you know, everybody knows that one little spot where that is.
And if you're in Denver, you'll know that there's like one tunnel that you have to go through. Well, unfortunately, whenever I left, there was a truck that caught on fire in that tunnel. So it got blocked down. And it was also, I think, July 4th weekend. So traffic was a nightmare. So my like 2-hour drive turned into a 6-hour drive. And
yeah,
I tried.
You got like pretty close to the tunnel down I-70, and then you had to turn around and go back and take 285.
Yeah, I could see the tunnel. Like, there were like 30 cars. I was there like basically right as it was shutting down.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's not a fun place to be.
No, no. So thankfully, like, called United, and I was actually trying to get them to change it out of Vail, but I was gonna make it there like 10 minutes before the flight departed, so I was like, that one's not gonna happen. So that was how they told me. They were like, oh, we've got this like flat tire provision, like, yeah, we'll move you and not charge you any difference, which was really nice. So
nice.
That was a fun little side quest. Let's talk like why you would want to reposition, because you might be like, we obviously in some of the examples highlighted different availability or the points cost being lower, but like why it can be powerful is you can unlock different international hubs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't fly from Houston to Cairo, but if I wanted to go to Egypt, I could reposition to DC, where Egypt Air flies from there to Cairo. You can obviously get better award availability, lower mileage costs. Sometimes you can get lower taxes and fees. You know, like, especially if you're maybe in London and you reposition somewhere else in Europe for your return flight back.
And the premium like products too, if you're trying to fly a specific cabin and that cabin doesn't fly out of your home airport, can be a good reason.
Yeah.
I think one of the overlooked things for repositioning flights too is something that might sound weird to a lot of people, but airlines a lot of times make their award availability based on what's called married segments. So without getting too convoluted, basically, if you live in or trying to fly out of a hub city, a lot of times you might search for a flight and you might find zero availability. But if you look out of a different city, you'll literally see availability flying through that hub to your destination. So, for example, if I searched Charlotte to London on American Airlines, I might see zero availability, or I might see the nonstop flight is 250,000 American Airlines miles one way. But if I search Greensboro to London and fly Greensboro to Charlotte, Charlotte to London on that same flight I searched before, I might literally see that it's available for 70,000 American Airlines miles. I actually see this quite regularly. They do this because of a number of things, but basically demand and like supply and demand, basic economics. They know if you're in a hub, you're going to be potentially more willing to pay a lot more money, a premium, to just hop on that nonstop. So adding a short connecting segment, that part doesn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense to me, but like that's how they operate. So take advantage of it. So if you're in a hub city, we see this a lot with readers in the group. They'll post that they can never find, especially, I think it's probably more American Airlines than other airlines, but I know other ones do it. But for instance, like, you see people all the time, I live in Dallas, so I have the American Airlines card, but I can never, you know, use my miles to find stuff like you guys are always talking about. And I'm like, yeah, you're kind of screwed. Well, positioning flights can be one way to help you alleviate that. Now, I'm not saying that if you live in Charlotte, you should drive to Greensboro to book the flight to then fly back to Charlotte to then go to London to save, you know, 180,000 America miles. That's up to you, but
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, weirder things have happened, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like not that different when you think about it. It's not that different from like how they do cash tickets, where you'll look from your home airport and it's $1,000, but someone else will connect through and get on the same flight for $500. Like, yep. This happened when we did our 10X travel trip to the Galapagos a few years ago. I really wanted the nonstop from Houston down to Ecuador, but it was so much more expensive for me. So I flew American through Miami. And then, of course, Mr. Matt flies United through Houston. Because it was
super cheap,
like more competitively priced. So it's functionally the same idea. They're just taking into account where their frequent flyers are based, really. And
there's more competition there, so they can just charge more.
Yep. So to sort of put a bow on it, positioning flights can be an option for you to sort of work around some of those potential restrictions, especially I would say, like, in places like Texas, where you've got a couple different hubs, Dallas and Houston, think the Northeast, think D.C., Philly, New Jersey, New York City. You know,
Boston.
You can get in Boston, exactly. You can get kind of some of those hubs pretty easily and relatively inexpensively to where it might make sense to, you know, book a flight from Philly to Newark to London instead of just Newark to London, or, you know, or something like that, just to kind of get around some of those restrictions.
Speaking of some of those airports, are there any airports that you find to typically be better to reposition to?
Yeah. I mean, for me, Denver is kind of like a weird one because there's a ton of flights, but like there's not always, there's a ton of flights to a lot of different destinations, but it's not always the ones that I'm trying to go to. So like I am, despite my initial belief of living further west than I actually do, I'm pretty center of the country, so I can go any direction. But on the East Coast, I'd probably do like Newark or JFK, IAD, Boston, any of those really. I mean, for me, because I'm so middle of the country, those positioning flights are going to be like 3 hours. So, I mean, it's not ideal, but if I were going to go all the way East Coast for better availability, I'd probably pick a couple of those.
Yeah, same for me. It's New York, D.C., Chicago, Miami, sometimes Boston. I actually have positioned to pretty much every single one of those airports. I will position to Dallas if I have to, but for me, it's usually to go to Europe or somewhere east. So going backwards 2 hours to then add 2 more hours to that leg, try to avoid it at all costs if I can, but we have booked that every once in a while.
Like I said earlier, I kind of reposition everywhere. I've positioned to the West Coast, especially for like Australia, South Pacific. You tend to have some better availability out of LAX, San Francisco. San Diego can be a sleeper sometimes.
Yep.
In fact, like there's a, I think you can fly from San Diego to KIX Osaka.
Oh.
I think there's also an LA one. So like some sneaky little routes that might not have as much attention. Like if you're looking to go to Japan, a lot of people just look to Tokyo. But there's a few of these little sleeper routes on the West Coast that you can take advantage of.
I think a couple other sneaky ones that people don't think of are some of the international repositioning flights. So think Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver if you're on the West Coast, or Mexico City can open up a ton of availability. I mentioned it earlier in our example, but we have positioned through Toronto a couple times. It's for us, it's like kind of on the way, so it's not a huge deal. Mm-hmm. I would not go from the East Coast to Vancouver, obviously, but Toronto, Montreal, an option. Yeah. But also Mexico City, especially like free Travis. Gosh, that's what, hour and a half, 2 hour flight, if something like that.
I've done that a number of times.
Right, and there is some great availability out of Mexico to like kind of anywhere in the world almost. Yeah. I was seriously considering, there's an Emirates Fifth Freedom flight from Barcelona to Mexico City that I was considering booking. It's on the 777. But that's like a three and a half hour flight back to Charlotte. So I was like, that's outside of my radius. So like if I have to, yes, but I was trying not to. So,
but Mexico City is such a great city. So like,
I agree.
It can be a nice place for a few days. We actually had a reader post in the Facebook group recently who I met at the Houston meetup last year, who just took her first international business class trip. And they did exactly that. They repositioned to Mexico City to catch Turkish Airlines business class.
Nice.
Which they also, I'd have to check if they still do. They also operate as a Fifth Freedom.
It, yep.
At least used to be Mexico City to Cancun to Istanbul. So it's like not that much longer than flying the nonstop from Houston, and availability tends to be way better. So
I've seen a lot of availability out of Mexico City when I've just been looking for random stuff. So if you're struggling to find availability, that would be a good one to look into, for sure. Wow. There's also like random routes. This is, I probably will never do it, but there's random tidbits throughout the Caribbean of places that you can technically like reposition to. So think some of the overseas territories, some of the islands are overseas territories. So they have flights, you know, to London on British Airways for some of their territories. France has like St. Martin. You can fly to France or or the Dutch side, I guess you can fly to
KLM.
KLM.
Curacao, Aruba.
Exactly. And a lot of them fly wide bodies on these routes. So obviously you would be trying to reposition through a high demand location in a lot of places. So like it might be very expensive points and miles wise or cash wise for you to, you know, fly to St. Martin in February to then hop a flight to Amsterdam. But it is an option.
You
or just stop there for stop there for 3 days on your way to Europe. So it can be kind of fun.
I don't know that it's funny because like Bonaire, I know they KLM flies there, and last time I was there, I saw the KLM plane and had the thought of reposition to Bonaire, but it's like a 4.5 hour flight. It's like going to Seattle,
right?
So, yeah,
I don't know that I'd do that.
Yeah, at that point, it becomes less of repositioning and more of we're going on two vacations in one.
Yeah,
right. Well, I like that repositioning strategy. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically a stopover, except two tickets.
Right.
So let's talk about, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a little bit. Let's talk about the risks and how you can try to minimize those risks as much as possible. The obvious biggest risk is your flight is canceled or delayed and you didn't leave a big enough window to get to your departing flight and you miss it. And then your whole trip is potentially screwed if they're not going to reaccommodate you, which by default, I would assume, like you should assume that they won't, that they will just be right. Like,
yeah,
we operated.
Yeah.
Like this is
not our problem.
You.
Well, and I think it depends where in the world you are too. Cause like culturally that's how a lot of cultures operate. Like, hey, this is a you problem, not me problem. That may differ from how some places here in the U.S. might handle it. You kind of got to just be cognizant and aware of that.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that that we look for when choosing a repositioning flight to kind of minimize these risks actually materializing?
So for me, in ours, for same day repositions, when essentially at all possible, I try to avoid booking the last possible flight before the next flight. So, for example, I always try to book when there's one backup flight. So if I'm trying to get to JFK, I'll book the 2 p.m. flight knowing that there might be a 4:30 flight or something like that also on that route. So in a pinch, obviously not guaranteed, but if something happens on my 2 o'clock flight, I can make every effort to try and get on that 4:30 flight to JFK also to try and make my, you know, 8 p.m. flight to Europe or whatever it might be. So it's not always avoidable, especially like I mentioned before, where there's one flight a day from Raleigh to Montreal. But whenever possible, which is like 98% of the time, that's kind of how we'll do it when we're doing same day repositions.
Yeah. And it's important to note on that, or I don't know if y'all take this approach. I take the approach of like that later flight needs to be operated by the same airline is what I try to do.
Like, oh yeah. That you're that like that the 2 and the 4:30 would be. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So like if the 2 o'clock was American, the 4:30 was United. Well, if American cancels, they're, you'd be fighting really hard to get them to book you on the United. It's not impossible, but it's improbable that you're going to get them to put you on that one.
One more stressor that you don't need.
Yeah.
Another thing to like really consider is where you're repositioning to and the time of year.
Yep.
Going to Chicago, like repositioning to Chicago in the winter, like maybe give yourself a little bit extra time, Emily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Repositioning to Atlanta in the middle of the summer, I would not try to get there after like 2 p.m. because there's massive thunderstorms like every day.
Yeah. Weather's a big one for sure. Yeah. One thing that you might think would be a trick, but doesn't actually work out in your favor is like trying to book multiple with the same airline, like multiple repositioning flights throughout the day. Like most airlines will just cancel one of them and it might not be the one that you wanted them to cancel because they'll just go, oh, there's no way Emily could fly from Denver to Chicago at 9 a.m. and then also fly from Denver to Chicago at 10:30. Yeah. So we're just going to kick her off of one of them and you don't really get to choose.
Yeah. Another one, like I mentioned earlier, is if you fly into a city that has multiple airports, New York, you've got three, like a lot of your flights will fly into LaGuardia, but your internationals will be out of JFK or, Lord forbid, like I did, Newark. Be sure to build in some buffer time for the travel between airports. I've had the travel between LaGuardia and JFK take like, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes. I've also had it take like an hour, hour and a half. Like the simplest thing you can do in all of these situations is just build in that buffer.
Like, yeah.
Which,
yeah. And more than you probably think you need.
Yeah. I am personally a really big fan of doing an overnight reposition. So if my flight leaves on Friday, I'll actually reposition on Thursday. Yes, I have to stay overnight, but it gives me a whole day to potentially
come up with a backup plan.
Yeah. A backup plan.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of doing that too. I mean, I think some of the hotel cards that give you free night certificates come into play here too. Like it makes it super easy to use them, especially because at most airports there's like a Hyatt Place or a Hilton Garden Inn or something that's like
Courtyard,
low tier
no
enough.
Frills.
Yeah. Low tier enough that you can use your free nights on. But I also just use it as an excuse to like visit friends and family that I haven't seen in a while in these places that I'm repositioning to.
Yeah.
It makes it really fun because in my experience, they're literally like, now why are you here again?
Yeah. Like, yeah. They're like, you're here for one night in LA and then you're going where?
Yeah.
Like, yep. One night only. Let's grab dinner and a drink, and I will, I don't know, see you the next time I'm going on an international trip.
like I mentioned, Mexico City, we always try a new restaurant in the city. There's a Courtyard right by the airport that's actually pretty nice, that typically is like 25,000 points. So if you've got a 35K night certificate, it's a solid use. Keep in mind, like, traffic to and from Mexico City can be a nightmare. That's another thing too, like definitely try to stay close to your airport, especially if it's a city you're unfamiliar with. Mexico City made me think of this because I've literally seen it take 2 to 3 hours to get from downtown to the airport. But if you check it at like 11 a.m. on a Wednesday, it'll say, oh, it's like 45 minutes. So
you base your schedule off of that. Yeah.
Yeah. You might not give yourself enough of a buffer. So that's why I just like to try to stay.
Stay close
to the airport.
It can be tempting for sure to be like, oh, I'm flying for one night into New York. Like I'm flying into JFK, but let me get a hotel in Times Square. And then you have this like massive journey ahead of you to get from the airport and back to the airport. And it, I mean, in some instances, yes, maybe it's worth it, but a lot of the times it's just easier to stay right by the airport.
Yeah. The only times I will stay farther away is if I'm repositioning the day before and it's an evening flight the following day.
Yeah. Yeah,
if it's a morning flight, like I don't want to be getting up any earlier than I have to be to get to the airport anyways, and adding any of that stress and risk of missing that flight.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about a lot of those hotels too is that if you're staying in the airport, they've got shuttles and they're like usually pretty on it. They'll pick you up and get you to the airport when you need to be there. So it makes it easier than trying to navigate like public transportation or Ubering in a city that you're unfamiliar with.
Yeah. Another thing, you know, we talked about free night certificates and stuff. Like these are just ways, if you're going to reposition overnight, to help save some money. If you've got a card that has a travel credit or a hotel credit, especially if booking through the bank's portal, this can sometimes be a sneaky good way to use those. I've used to use them before to stay at like the TWA hotel at JFK, which is what the old I'm forgetting which airline, which is really embarrassing. I know it's not American. It's like, oh, the TWA airline.
I was waiting for you to work through that one.
Did I mention that like little bit of YouTube, travel hangover just, I'm going through?
Yeah. If you're watching right now, you probably saw my face. I'm like, why aren't you helping? I was just, no, I'm just going to let you work through that one all by yourself.
I thought you were frozen.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
if you're a travel nerd, the TWA hotel, which is the old TWA terminal at JFK, has been turned into a hotel. It's just kind of like nerdy,
quirky,
fun,
yeah,
quirky, but it's typically pretty pricey, like $400 or $500 a night. So if you've got one of those credits and it shows up in the portal, you know, it might not cover the whole thing, but it can knock a small chunk off of it to just kind of get to experience it.
Well, and the nice thing is you're right there by the air train,
yeah,
so that whenever you're trying to go, which, because JFK, like, it's great that it has the train, but it's a big spread out airport. If you're positioning flight, you should look into where you're connecting through, because a place like JFK where you have to like ride a potential, I don't know, 10 or 15 minute train to like do the full loop of the airport, mm-hmm, and then go through security again, like factor that in.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I love, and it's hard to find in the US, but if you're doing like an international positioning, I actually love some of the hotels that are airside, so you're already through security.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are cool.
Yeah. Doha's got some. I stated one because of a missed flight. Not our fault. Our flight was delayed and it was all one ticket. So the airline accommodated us in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. There was one. It just takes a lot of the stress off.
Oh, 100%. Like,
they're not necessarily going to be the nicest ones, but knowing that you just have to walk to your gate from where you are is...
But even if they're not... through security, I think of ones like the Grand Hyatt at SFO. I stayed there recently, which was great. There's like a Hyatt Regency, I think, at O'Hare.
And a few other ones. DFW one,
yeah, exactly. So there are a couple that are just literally like in the airport that are, you know, some of them have, I think the Hyatt one at DFW or O'Hare, actually maybe both, I don't know, has like a special security accommodation where you can literally they have like the dedicated security lane, like straight from their lobby. So like that can help too. It's as close to like through security as you can potentially get. I think that's the one at ORD actually. Anyways.
Yeah. Did you stay at one in Orlando last year, Matt? Wasn't there like an airport?
Yeah, that's another one.
Was it in the hotel?
Yeah, that's a Hyatt Play. No, what is that?
Yeah. It's a Marriott. No,
I think it's a Hyatt.
Oh.
No, it's a Hyatt Regency. I don't know. There's a Hyatt hotel in the Orlando airport. Yeah, Hyatt Regency. Yeah. And you literally like go up an escalator at the security gate. So,
oh, nice.
It's like surprisingly a big hotel.
Yeah.
But it's literally like on top of the terminal. So if you come in late one night and have to go out the next day or vice versa, super, super convenient. Like could not be more convenient. No shuttle needed.
Yeah.
Your shuttle that you have to take is the little train you take from the terminal to the main terminal. And that's it.
One thing to keep in mind with those shuttles as well is, especially at some of the more budget brands, if you're using free night certificates or like you're just paying a cash rate and you're picking something cheap and close, that I've come across more recently is like you have to pre-reserve your shuttle time.
Interesting.
Yeah, I ran into this. It's happened a few times, but the one that stands out was when we flew out of Atlanta to Ethiopia, that same trip, on the way to the Seychelles. And like when we checked in, we had to reserve a time. And they're like, oh, like we can only accommodate 8 people per time slot, and it only runs every like 30, 45 minutes.
When you're going from the hotel to the airport?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have seen that as well. I thought you were talking about it on pickup, and I was like, how do they know how long baggage claim is
going to
take?
Oh, yeah, no. No, gotcha. Like going back to the airport. So, like, just something small to double check. Be sure that there's... I've never run into there not being space for me, but I have seen people who didn't bother to reserve a time and then they want to get on the shuttle at a specific time. And it's a morning flight, and so they're trying to get the latest shuttle that they feel comfortable, and then it's not available.
And if you miss it, a lot of those shuttle loops are 15, 20 minutes, even the hotels that are basically at the airport, just because traffic and the flow they have to take or whatever. So
yeah,
if you have a unexpected 20-minute, unbudgeted 20 minutes that is having to come out of an already tight, potentially tight time window, you can, that'll stress you out potentially a little bit more than you may be aware expecting.
Yeah, I think Maria's closest repositioning was when we went to France for Christmas and New Year's. I think this was 2 years ago. And we found last minute first class availability on Lufthansa out of Frankfurt to Mexico City. But there was only one award flight on Air France. So I actually woke up early and took the train. So I repositioned from Paris to Frankfurt via train.
Oh.
Yeah, so like something you can do in Europe, reposition by train.
That's true.
She took the flight, and it was slightly delayed, got pretty tight, and she ended up not getting to spend any time in the first class.
That's terminal.
Terminal.
Oh, that's a bummer.
She didn't have time to go there.
Bummer.
She basically just had to rush to the gate.
Did you bring a rubber ducky for her?
They only gave me one.
Oh, it's my duck, not your duck.
Yeah,
it's my duck.
It's up there. It's yeah, in my office.
Nice.
You know, like that's something to consider too. Is if there's an aspirational lounge as well that you're wanting to go to, like it's a great way to give yourself a little extra time to experience it.
Or even on the opposite end, don't fly home out of London. Take the channel. Go to Paris for like a day or two, or Amsterdam, whatever. Avoid the crazy taxes. And get another day or two there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've done it.
Yeah. I've repositioned in Europe a lot. Yeah.
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 All right. We've kind of hit some of the highlights of how to handle it. You know, give yourself plenty of time if able, and your risk tolerance is low. Reposition the day before to give yourself an extra buffer. Don't book the last flight out. Consider the weather, consider the airport, consider where you're staying. But what are some other kind of small things that can go wrong that people might miss when booking their repositioning flight?
Going full basic economy on your repositioning flight might lead to a little extra stress if like it gets canceled or something happens and you need to change your flight in any way. You're kind of screwed at that point if you've booked a ticket that doesn't allow refunds or changes or anything like that. So you might not want to risk it, even if it saves you like, I don't know, $40. Get the regular economy.
Definitely get the regular economy. Just not having any travel insurance. Like, and it's not so much about covering your missed flight. It's if you miss that, you might have to spend, like, even if they reaccommodate you, you might have to spend an extra day or two where you weren't expecting to, probably having to pay out of pocket for some of that stuff. So having good travel insurance can go a long way as well. One last tip that I'll leave, and if y'all have any additional tips as well, is just because you've booked your flight doesn't mean you can't sometimes add on an extra segment. So like if when you went to book it, right, let's say my availability from Houston to Dallas didn't exist, but then later they add saver level availability, sometimes you can call and just have them add that leg on. So now your reposition is built into the same itinerary and like you're covered if something goes wrong. Not all airlines will do this. Some will say, oh, like, because they might have to cancel. Some airlines' infrastructure can't just add on that extra bit, and so they would have to cancel and rebook everything, so you would need full end-to-end availability. But it's worth a shot. And of course, if you see the full end-to-end availability open up, you can risk canceling your existing ticket, or if you have enough points, book the new
danger,
one.
Danger, danger.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that that's going back into the award availability pool at the same price would be my caution.
To be clear, I'm saying like you've got your ticket booked, like say Dallas to London, and then you see, oh, there is a Sabre availability, Houston to Dallas to London.
Book a new ticket. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, book a new ticket. It is still risky because you might cancel and then it's phantom availability or it gets swiped out from underneath you. So if you have the points already, I would book the new ticket, then cancel. I don't know. Unless it's a program I use a lot, I wouldn't necessarily transfer to do that. I'd probably take the risk and cancel if I felt like it was something I wanted to do. But honestly, like usually once I've got something booked, I'm not going to do that. The most I'll do is call and see if they can add the new leg onto my ticket for me.
I've also had success with the kind of the reverse of that. Like the situation Matt was describing earlier where like say you live in Charlotte and you can't get on the Charlotte to London flight, but they have availability from Greensboro to Charlotte to London. Mm-hmm. If you book that knowing you're not going to fly the Greensboro to Charlotte leg and you call and you say like, hey, I just need to adjust my flight. I'm going to remove this first leg. I have had success. I'm not saying it happens every time, nice. But they will remove that for you and without repricing it.
Nice.
Give it a go. Why not?
That's a good one.
Yeah. The only other tip I'll add is on the way back, repositioning wise, like the same strategy follows, like based on the time that you're arriving in the city, leave yourself like 4+ hours for your next flight. But if you're in a city that's a hub where you can easily like change the repositioning flight to be earlier, I've done that a few times. Once you land and you know that you are going to make the next flight,
just like go on standby or something on an earlier flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. We did that coming back from Sydney to LA, and we landed much earlier than we were supposed to, like maybe an hour and a half earlier. And I was on a United repositioning flight back to Denver, and I just found a helpful agent who put me on standby, and then I was on the next flight that left in like an hour. It's great.
That's a really good tip. I've never done that myself, but I know Maria did that same situation flying back from New Zealand. Like her connection was like 12 hours and she just went and said, hey, can you accommodate me on this one? And she ended up flying standby. Same deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of exciting to see. Am I going to make it? I don't know.
This is also a really good place to utilize if you have a Southwest companion pass and you're flying with someone else. Like if Southwest is convenient, it can help save a little bit more on that repositioning flight for sure.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I think none of us have that anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Nope. We'll see. Maybe we'll see. Someday.
Yeah. I haven't even flown Southwest yet this year.
I haven't flown Southwest in probably 3 years now, which is wild because I had this companion pass for like 6 years.
Yeah.
I am flying Southwest to go from Austin to Dallas for our meetups here.
Oh, yeah, we are doing that.
3 weeks from now?
Long haul Southwest flight.
Yeah. OG Southwest flight.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. Yep.
So
that'll we'll be see my how the seat reservation goes.
Oh, that's right.
For reminding me.
Did you book a seat?
I think when I booked it, that wasn't live yet.
Okay.
Southwest.com. All right. I'll do that after this recording. Any other tips or anything for repositioning? Because I've got a seat to select on Southwest.
Yeah. We got to go.
All I've got to share.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're saying that is all that you have. Oh.
That's all I've got. Yep. Nothing else.
Yeah. I think Emily and I both think that is all I've got to share is. All right. Yeah. Well, here's your takeaway, right? Repositioning flights are one of those strategies that can help you unlock incredible value as long as you respect the risk. You don't want to gamble your trip. That's not the goal. The goal is to weigh in your options. Pretty easy to do. Don't book the last flight between the cities. Be aware of the time of year and where you're going. If you want to be extra safe, reposition the day before or the night before, just to give yourself a little bit extra buffer. Now, if you're repositioning, you can do it on the outbound. You can do it on the return. You can do it by plane, train, car, automobile. You know, I mean,
I think two of those things are the same.
Probably, but I feel like that's a saying, and maybe I'm just making it up. I don't know of anyone that's repositioned by like horse or bicycle, but if you have, like, let us know. That's probably an option as well.
E-bike? Sure.
E-bike.
All right, now we're just getting carried away. It's time to go sleep at the TWA hotel.
Yeah. But honestly, just give yourself time. That's the best buffer that that you can give. You know, collectively between the three of us, 30 plus years of points experience, and none of us have actually had a repositioning flight fail us. We've gotten close, obviously, the fact of the matter is it's a very common strategy. It's one that can be a little scary and intimidating for people the first time that they do it. But it can make the difference between taking your trip and not. And as long as you effectively manage the risks, it's completely doable and can really help unlock some additional value from your points. So, if this episode helps you think about repositioning flights more strategically, share it with all of your friends that live at regional airports who might need to hear this. If you want help building a plan for repositioning without the stress, feel free to utilize our award booking service. That's exactly what it's there for, is to help present you with the options, walk you through them, and help put together a successful trip for you. And we've got some meetups coming up this year. You can find some information at 10xtravel.com/events, as well as in our Facebook group. We'll drop those in the show notes. So we would love to see you at some of our meetups as well. In April, we'll be in Austin, Dallas, and Denver. In June, we'll be in Nashville and Charlotte. And then in October, we'll be in New York, Detroit, and Minneapolis. You can find we'll put the details, or the link to the details, in the show notes. There's no cost. Just show up. If you fly in, great. If you're local, also great. Be sure to leave us a comment if you've got any questions about repositioning flights. Like, subscribe, share with all of your friends at regional airports. There's lots of them, so let them know. And until next time,
should I be offended as the only non-hub resident in this episode?
That just means you've got more friends to share this episode with.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So until next time, travel smart, and give yourself that extra overnight buffer.